Tim, alcoholic.
Tim.
All right, guys, we're doing the second half of Two Wives. We're on page 112. That means we're in the third full paragraph, starting with the word suppose. Before we get going, I'd like just to read the set-aside prayer. This is a version of a set-aside prayer, customarily done in meeting types like this. God, please set aside everything I think I know about myself, the 12 steps, this book, the meetings, my disease, and you, God, so I may have an open mind and a new experience with all these things. Please let me see the truth. Amen. All right, so we're in the first of the three Al-Anon chapters, and sometimes these are sort of bypassed a little bit by alcoholics because, you know, like, we're alcoholics and we're not Al-Anon, so we don't really put a lot of time into them, but I think that's a mistake, and the reason I think it's a mistake is I think there's a lot of great information for sponsors, for your sober network, one alcoholic dealing with another alcoholic. And I think there's a lot of program suggestions in here overall that make them worthy of our attention. So, that being said, suppose, however, that your husband fits the description of number two. The same principles which apply to husband number one should be practiced. But after his next binge, ask him if he would really like to get over drinking for good. Do not ask that he do it for you or anyone else. Just would he like to? The chances are he would. Show him your copy of this book and tell him what you have found out about alcoholism. Show him that as alcoholics, the writers of the book understand. Tell him some of the interesting stories you have read. If you think he will be shy of a spiritual remedy, ask him to look at the chapter on alcoholism, which obviously is page 30 and is step one. Why would we start on step two, right? Let's start with the powerless concept. That's the place. If you're going to talk about spiritual remedy, we first need to talk about step one, which is going to discuss powerlessness and that our life will remain unmanageable when we try to fix a beyond human aid issue with self-will. So even after we stop drinking and whatever else we're doing, our lives will remain unmanageable if we depend on self-will. Then perhaps he will be interested enough to continue. If he is enthusiastic, your cooperation will mean a great deal. If he is lukewarm or thinks he is not an alcoholic, we suggest you leave him alone. Avoid urging him to follow our program. The seed has been planted in his mind. He knows that thousands of men, much like himself, have recovered. Recovered from what? Seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. But don't remind him of this after he has been drinking, for he may be angry. Sooner or later, you are likely to find him reading the book once more. Wait until repeated stumblings convinces him he must act. For the more you hurry him, the longer his recovery may be delayed. So I believe a stumbling is a bottom or a mini bottom in our journey to get it. So we want to wait until we get repeated bottoms, and hopefully one of those bottoms will be the initiator of wanting to start the program. If you have a number three husband, you may be in luck. And I think this is really interesting. Number one, we have less hope for. The illness is getting worse as we increase our numbers, right? So number one, we're not that hopeful of. Number two, we're starting to think that there's a chance. Number three, we're actually believing that we're in luck. So as the illness progresses, it increases our chances of coming into the program and it actually taking hold, right? Being certain he wants to stop, you can go to him with his volume as joyfully as though you had struck oil. He may not share your enthusiasm, but he is practically sure to read the book. and he may go for the program at once. If he does not, you will probably not have long to wait. Again, you should not crowd him. Let him decide for himself. Cheerfully see him through more sprees. Talk about his condition or this book only when he raises the issue. In some cases, it may be better to let someone outside the family present the book. They can urge action without arousing hostility. If your husband is otherwise a normal individual, your chances are good at this stage. You would suppose that men in the fourth classification would be quite hopeless. And what did we learn in last week's? Hopeless is good. This is the one illness where hopeless is good. But that is not so. Many of Alcoholics Anonymous were like that. Everybody had given up on them. And I think that's defined as somebody that's probably more low bottom than high bottom, right? Defeat seemed certain, yet often such men had spectacular and powerful recoveries. And that typically is due to the gift of desperation. We get hopeless. It gets us interested in some way out of the problem. When we're presented with the solution, we're more apt to take the suggestion, because there's less options open to us. If we have too many options, we're not going to take the hard ones. There are exceptions. Some men have been so impaired by alcohol, they cannot stop. Sometimes there are cases where alcoholism is complicated by other disorders. A good doctor or psychiatrist can tell you whether these complications are serious. In any event, try to have your husband read this book. His reaction may be one of enthusiasm. If he is already committed to an institution, but can convince you and your doctor that he means business, give him a chance to try our method, unless the doctor thinks his mental condition too abnormal or dangerous. So we did see at the top of the paragraph here where it said, there are some men that have been so impaired by alcohol that they cannot stop. So whether that's for mental reasons or physical reasons, in other words, you can't just stop when you're so physically hooked on this, right? So that would require a good doctor or psychiatrist. That's not a choice. That's a mandatory. We make this recommendation with some confidence. For years, we have been working with alcoholics committed to institutions. Since this book was first published, AA has released thousands of alcoholics from asylums and hospitals of every kind. The majority have never returned. The power of God goes deep. So does anybody know the first psychiatric institution in which AA went into? That would be more of a detox. No, I think it's very, the stat is very specific to psychiatric. In other words, where people have been put in there because there were no other options for them and they were treated more like mentally ill. They were actually, it's almost flight deck-like. You know, you're associating with people with other issues also. But the answer to that is Rockland State Hospital in Rockland County.
What year was that?
I'd say 1940. Book came out in 39. Actually, I have a picture of the sign in front of, I think it's 40 or 41. First AA meeting with the permission of the chairman of the hospital or whatever, the director of the hospital, to come in, and people were actually released into the care of other AAers. Like, all right, go give him a shot. Yeah. So that's, you know, part of that. You may have the reverse situation on your hands. Perhaps you have a husband who is at large, but who should be committed. Some men cannot or will not get over alcoholism. When they become too dangerous, we think the kind thing is to lock them up. But of course, a good doctor should always be consulted. The wives and children of such men suffer horribly, but not more than the men themselves. But sometimes you must start life anew. We know women who have done it. If such women adopt a spiritual way of life, their road will be smoother. So that is this is pre-Al-Anon, right? Al-Anon 1953, I believe. The stat is coming up, I think. 1953. So what they're saying is that the wives could just as easily benefit from the 12 steps. And what's the only change that they make in Al-Anon? We admitted we are powerless over the alcoholic. That's the only change. If your husband is a drinker, you probably worry over what other people are thinking and you hate to meet your friends. You draw more and more into yourself and you think everyone is talking about conditions at your home. You avoid the subject of drinking even with your own parents. You do not know what to tell the children. When your husband is bad, you become a trembling recluse, wishing the telephone had never been invented. We find that most of this embarrassment is unnecessary. While you need not discuss your husband at length, you can quietly let your friends know the nature of his illness. What would that be? What would be the nature of the alcoholic's illness? We learn that in the doctor's opinion. It's mental and physical. You can talk about it as an allergy. You can talk about the phenomenon of craving once alcohol goes in. You can say that that's not the crux of the problem, because even if you stay away from it and you don't put it in your body, your mind is going to obsess over it and it's going to bring you back to it anyway. So you can talk about it in that sense, that it's a compulsive, obsessive hound, that you have no defense against the first drink. We have no choice over whether we drink or not. Hence, we are powerless. We are beyond human aid. The only thing we have choice of, we had this conversation before, the only thing we have choice over is to do that. Right? So once you've been exposed to this and you choose not to repeat it, you choose not to follow it, then you made a choice to drink again. See? You don't have a choice whether you drink or not. Now, once you're on a spiritual path, you build up a big buffer zone between you and the potentiality of another drink, but you can never say, I got up this morning and I made a choice not to drink. Baloney. We're powerless over alcohol. Key point. You only make a choice of the efforts to prevent the next drink, to stay on a spiritual path. But you must be on guard not to embarrass or harm your husband. When you have carefully explained to such people that he is a sick person, you will have created a new atmosphere, because up to 1939, it would be more apt to talk about this situation as weak-willed. That we'd only be talking about the mental part of it. We wouldn't be talking about the physical part. That's what Dr. Silkworth gave us. The idea of the physical allergy, the phenomenon of craving. What's a phenomenon? It is observable craving. Sometimes we use a casual word of craving. Bill brought it up one night, that you can use a casual. Yeah, I'm craving a coffee. That's cool. You couldn't say that I have a phenomenon of craving for coffee, because that means observable. You put it under a microscope, you could see that when I did this, that it changed my chemical makeup to make me drink the next cup. Different word, different phrase than craving by itself. Phenomenon of craving is observable craving. Barriers which have sprung up between you and your friends will disappear with the growth of sympathetic understanding. You will no longer be self-conscious or feel that you must apologize as though your husband were a weak character. He may be anything but that. Your new courage, good nature, and lack of self-consciousness will do wonders for you socially. The same principle applies in dealing with the children. Unless they actually need protection from their father, it is best not to take sides in any argument he has with them while drinking. Use your energies to promote a better understanding all around. Then that terrible tension which grips the home of every problem drinker will be lessened. Frequently, you have felt obliged to tell your husband's employer and his friends that he was sick, when as a matter of fact, he was tight. Avoid answering these inquiries as much as you can. Whenever possible, Let your husband explain, don't enable, right? Your desire to protect him should not cause you to lie to people when they have a right to know where he is and what he is doing. Discuss this with him when he is sober and in good spirits. Ask him what you should do if he places you in such a position again. But be careful not to be resentful about the last time he did so. There is another paralyzing fear. You may be afraid your husband will lose his position. You are thinking of the disgrace and hard times which will befall you and the children. This experience may come to you, or you may already have had it several times. Should it happen again, regard it in a different light. Maybe it will prove a blessing. I think that's a very significant statement because it's a completely shifted way of the outlook we place on the world. That the destitution that you could face due to somebody else's alcoholism could prove to be a blessing. Well, A, if we look a couple of lines back, if the spouse of the alcoholic gets on a spiritual path due to alcoholism, that would be a blessing. If the spouse's behavior helped elicit the alcoholic's attempt at this program, that would be a blessing. If the alcoholic worked through the plan and got sober and then tried to help other people, that would be a blessing. So that is a psychic change all around. Husband and wife. It's the transformational look at how we present to the world. Not what we're trying to get, but what we're trying to give. It may convince your husband he wants to stop. It may convince your husband he wants to stop drinking forever. And now you know that he can stop if he will. So what is that saying? The spouse has learned that there's a solution. So the spouse now gets hope. And what the prior paragraphs are trying to say is that it's a wrong read to merely be mad at them because they just did it again. They haven't been exposed to the solution yet. Here it's making the point that you know the solution before the spouse. You got the book first. You read through this stuff. You're trying to introduce this to your spouse. So here it's saying, and now you know that he can stop if he will. Time after time, this apparent calamity has been a boon to us, for it opened up a path which led to the discovery of God. So the hopelessness, the bottom, the gift of desperation is our greatest asset. It's not that we were the CEO of some big Fortune 500 company. It's not that. The greatest asset we have is the thing that we found that got us to be able to not drink anymore and get on a spiritual path and now look at the world in a completely different way. Priceless. Everything else is secondary to that. We have elsewhere remarked how much better life is when lived on a spiritual plane. If God can solve the age-old riddle of alcoholism, he, capital H, can solve your problems too. Plural, not problem, not talking about booze now. It's talking about everything. I have fear that I'm going to get divorced. I have fear I'm not going to have enough money. I fear I'm going to lose my job. I have fear of the next storm. I have the fear of ISIS. You go right on down. I don't care what you have a fear of. He can solve your problems too. Does that mean any one of those things won't happen? Nope. It means the fear of them have the potentiality to be lifted, right? Sandy Beach said all the time, he said, you lose your job, is it good to pray to God to get another job? No. God's plan may think that in 2 years you should get another job. Why wait for relief? pray for the fear of the job being gone to be removed right now. You can get the result right this second. Don't wait for the plan. Don't pray for the job. That could be, you may never get a job again. Irrelevant. It's how we feel about it that we can affect. We wives found that like everybody else, we were afflicted with pride, self-pity, vanity, and all the things which go to make up the self-centered person. And we were not above selfishness or dishonesty. As our husbands began to apply spiritual principles in their lives, we began to see the desirability of doing so too. So it's a family thing. You see it in the other person. Whatever you see, you know, whatever you see in the mirror gets reflected back to you. You have the potentiality of the same exact thing. What's the root cause of all of our problems? Selfish self-centeredness. Selfish self-centeredness. Does not say in the book the problem is booze. It's only a symptom. It says it in the book, only a symptom. The problem is selfish self-centered, which led to, over years of using booze, to then become an alcoholic. But it's selfish self-centered that started that. And you can give up booze and still remain a selfish, self-centered SOB, and your life will remain unmanageable. 32 years sober, life still unmanageable. Self-will. At first, some of us did not believe we needed this help. We thought, on the whole, we were pretty good women, capable of being nicer if our husband stopped drinking. But it was a silly idea that we were too good to need God. Now, we try to put spiritual principles to work in every department of our lives. Step 12, second part. And practice these principles in all our affairs. What's the purpose of the first 11 steps? To do good 12-step work. That just keeps the channel open to do that work. When we do that, we find it solves our problems too. So the big book authors now are speaking to the wives. So not only did the alcoholics, all of their problems get solved, now the spouse's problems are all solved. The ensuing lack of fear, worry, and hurt feelings is a wonderful thing. We urge you to try our program, speaking to the wives, for nothing will be so helpful to your husband as the radically changed attitude toward him, which God will show you how to have. Go along with your husband if you possibly can. If you and your husband find a solution for the pressing problem of a drink, you are, of course, going to be very happy. But all problems will not be solved at once. Seed has started to sprout in a new soil, but growth has only begun. In spite of your newfound happiness, there will be ups and downs. Many of the old problems will still be with you. I underline this one twice. This is how it should be. I'm sorry, I didn't read that quite right. This is as it should be. Wow, what did that just tell me? So my shortcomings, my problems, the spiritual journey that I'm on, that I'm not perfect at, is exactly the way it's supposed to be. If we didn't have struggles with those things, why grow more? Why would I do any work if everything's good? So the ups and downs is part of the plan. How so, you ask? The faith and sincerity of both of you, and both you and your husband, will be put to the test. These workouts should be regarded as part of your education, for thus you will be learning to live. You will make mistakes, but if you are earnest, they will not drag you down. Instead, you will capitalize them. A better way of life will emerge when they are overcome. So they are needed as the fodder to work through, to keep grinding through this to have the better way of life. Some of the snags you will encounter are irritation, hurt feelings, and resentments. Your husband will sometimes be unreasonable and you will want to criticize. Starting from a speck on the domestic horizon, great thunderclouds of dispute may gather. These family dissensions are very dangerous, especially to your husband. Often you must carry the burden of avoiding them or keeping them under control. Never forget that resentment is a deadly hazard to the alcoholic, right? Number one offender. We do not mean that you have to agree with your husband whenever there is an honest difference of opinion. Just be careful not to disagree in a resentful or critical spirit. What does resentment mean? Refeel. I'm losing sleep at night. I'm staring at the ceiling. I said, that's SOB. He said, blah, 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 or she said, blah. That's a resentment. You and your husband will find that you can dispose of serious problems easier than you can the trivial ones. Next time you and he have a heated discussion, no matter what the subject, it should be the privilege of either to smile and say, "This is getting serious. I'm sorry I got disturbed. Let's talk about it later." If your husband is trying to live on a spiritual basis, he will also be doing everything in his power to avoid disagreement or contention. Your husband knows he owes more, your husband knows he owes you more than sobriety, which sometimes we just discuss as living amends, right? I stay sober, that's a living amends, right? He wants to make good, yet you must not expect too much. His ways of thinking and doing are the habits of years. These are all assets now. Patience, tolerance, understanding, and love are the watchwords. Show him these things in yourself, and they will be reflected back to you from him. So you reap what you sow. Live and let live is the rule. If you both show a willingness to remedy your own defects, you're not pointing them out in the other person. I'm showing a willingness to remedy my own defects. There will be little need to criticize each other. We women carry with us a picture of the ideal man, the sort of chap we would like our husbands to be. It is the most natural thing in the world, once his liquor problem is solved, to feel that he will now measure up to that cherished vision. The chances are he will not, for, like yourself, he is just beginning his development. Be patient. Another feeling we are very likely to entertain is one of resentment, that love and loyalty could not cure our husbands of alcoholism. We do not like the thought that the contents of a book or the work of another alcoholic has accomplished in a few weeks that for which we struggled for years. That would constitute a resentment, right? I have a resentment that this clown comes into the house, another alcoholic, talks about some things, they start going to a meetings, he starts doing the steps, and he gets sober. I have a resentment over that. I've been working on that for 10 years. At such moments, we forget that alcoholism is an illness over which we could not possibly have had any power. No choice. Right? On the spouse's part, no control over it. I shouldn't have used choice on that. The spouse has no power over it, and the alcoholic has no choice in the matter of the drink. Your husband will be the first to say that it was your devotion and care which brought him to the point where he could have a spiritual experience. Without you, he would have gone to pieces long ago. When resentful thoughts come, try to pause and count your blessings. Right? So we use that in the program all the time. Write a gratitude list. That's where there's an example where it comes right from the text. After all, your family is reunited. Alcohol is no longer a problem. And you and your husband are working together toward an undreamed of future. That could be the first thing on your gratitude list, right? That one sentence. Still, another difficulty is that you may become jealous of the attention he bestows on other people, especially alcoholics. You have been starving for his companionship, yet he spends long hours helping other men and their families. You feel he should now be yours. I double underline this. The fact is that he should work with other people to maintain his own sobriety. So that's the big book authors, specifically Bill, who wrote this chapter, remember, right, from last week, telling us that we must be doing step 12 repeatedly and forever. Sometimes he will be so interested that he becomes really neglectful. Your house is filled with strangers. You may not like some of them. He gets stirred up about their troubles, but not at all about yours. It will do little good if you point that out and urge more attention for yourself. Why would that be? Because they're on a spiritual path also, and that would be selfish, self-centered. We find it is a real mistake to dampen his enthusiasm for alcoholic work. You should join in his efforts as much as you possibly can. Lois is a great example of that, right? She was all in with him. Ann Smith, all in with Dr. Bob. We suggest that you direct some of your thought to the wives of his new alcoholic friends. So rather than sitting home and be resentful that Tommy or Mary is at the meeting doing their thing, right? You should get on the phone, the spouse should get on the phone and call the spouse of the person he's at the meeting with to see if you can help them. They need the counsel and love of a woman who has gone through what you have. It is probably true that you and your husband have been living too much alone, for drinking many times isolates the wife of an alcoholic. Therefore, you probably need fresh interests and a great cause to live for as much as your husband. So that's a great steering towards Al-Anon. So if somebody says, well, I don't see in the big book where it says I should go to Al-Anon, right there. If you cooperate rather than complain, you will find that his excess enthusiasm will tone down. Both of you will awaken to a new sense of responsibility for others. You, as well as your husband, ought to think of what you can put into life instead of how much you can take out. Inevitably, your lives will be fuller for doing so. You will lose the old life to find a much better. To find one much better. I use the term transcendence. That's another word that could be described to do that. Psychic change, transcendence. Perhaps your husband will make a fair start on the new basis, but just as things are going beautifully, he dismays you by coming home drunk. If you are satisfied he really wants to get over drinking, you need not be alarmed, though it is infinitely better that he have no relapse at all. As has been true with many of our men, it is by no means a bad thing in some cases. Your husband will see at once that he must redouble his spiritual activities if he expects to survive. You need not remind him of his spiritual deficiency. He will know of it. Cheer him up and ask him how you can be still more helpful. The slightest sign of fear or intolerance may lessen your husband's chance of recovery. In a weak moment, he may take your dislike of his high-stepping friends as one of those insanely trivial excuses to drink. We never, never try to arrange a man's life so as to shield him from temptation, because that would be equivalent to saying we're on a water wagon gig. We're just giving it up for Lent. We're not really changing our whole life. It's a spiritual transformation, spiritual awakening, spiritual experience. Because if we were trying to arrange the spouse's life, that would mean that you still believe there's an element of choice in the gig. Oh, I won't let them go near a bar. Well, then you missed the point of everything we just read. the slightest disposition on your part to guide his appointments or his affairs so he will not be tempted will be noticed. Make him feel absolutely free to come and go as he likes. This is important. This is great information to the sponsor, right? If he gets drunk, don't blame yourself. God has either removed your husband's liquor problem or he has not. Notice it doesn't say the spouse had anything to do with it, right? It's the spiritual journey that did it. If not, it had better be found out right away. Then you and your husband can get right down to fundamentals. If a repetition is to be prevented, place the problem, along with everything else, in God's hands. It's not that you go around the block to avoid the front of the liquor store, but that's not to say that early in our game, or at any time in our game, if we didn't want to put ourselves in certain circumstances, that's okay too. That's okay too. We realize that we have been giving you much direction and advice. We may have seemed to lecture. If that is so, we are sorry, for we ourselves don't always care for people who lecture us. But what we have related is based upon experience, some of it painful. We had to learn these things the hard way. That is why we are anxious that you understand and that you avoid these unnecessary difficulties. Note, bottom of the page. Here's our 1952. I said 53 before. The Fellowship of Al-Anon Family Groups was formed about 13 years after this chapter was written. Though it is entirely separate from Alcoholics Anonymous, it uses the general principles of the AA program as a guide for husbands, wives, relatives, friends, and others close to alcoholics. The foregoing pages, though addressed only to wives, indicate the problems such people may face. Alateen, for teenaged children of alcoholics, is part of Al-Anon. If there is no Al-Anon listing in your local telephone book, you may obtain further information from Al-Anon/Alateen Family Groups by writing to its World Service Office, 1600 Corporate Landing Parkway, Virginia Beach, Virginia 23454 5617. So, to you out there who may soon be with us, we say good luck and God bless you.